Hi, everyone. This week's episode is a bit different than what you're used to hearing on this show. You'll be hearing from an ordinary person who's caught in extraordinary circumstances. And please be advised, this conversation could be really difficult to hear. Kate Cox, a Texas mother of two, was thrilled to find out she was pregnant with her third child last year. But the dream of expanding their family quickly turned into a nightmare when Cox and her husband were told that their fetus had an anomaly called trisomy 18 that, in their case, was fatal. It's a genetic condition that causes significant growth delays and is usually fatal in utero or shortly after birth. While there are some cases of infants with trisomy 18 surviving past the first year, Cox's doctors told her that their baby had so much damage to the heart and brain that there was no chance of survival. Continuing the pregnancy would put her own health at risk, and a third delivery could put her future fertility in jeopardy. But ever since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in 2022, abortion has been almost entirely illegal in Texas, and anyone who performs one can be subject to legal jeopardy. So last December, Cox asked a Texas court to temporarily block the state's abortion ban so she could receive urgent medical care, becoming the first pregnant woman to sue for the right to terminate her pregnancy since the Dobbs decision. She was represented by the Center for Reproductive Rights, which is also representing 20 other women in Zurowski versus Texas, a landmark lawsuit asking the Texas Supreme Court to clarify the state's medical exceptions to its abortion ban. A judge granted Cox a temporary restraining order, allowing her to get an abortion. But Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton stood in the way, threatening to prosecute her doctors and taking the case to the Texas Supreme Court. Cox ended up going to New Mexico to terminate her pregnancy, just as the state Supreme Court blocked the lower court's ruling allowing her to receive care. Now, months after her abortion, Kate Cox is ready to talk about her experience. As you'll hear in our conversation, she's speaking out about the grim reality for pregnant women in post-Roe America, and she recently attended the State of the Union as one of the Biden's guests. I went down to Dallas to meet Cox in her home to hear her story, and stay tuned for my forthcoming profile of Cox in an upcoming issue of Time. I'm Charlotte Alter, senior correspondent for Time, and this is Person of the Week. So, Kate, can you tell us a little bit about what your life was like before all this happened?
So, I'm a mom. We've got two little ones. My daughter's three. My son's a year and a half. I guess getting close to two now. My husband and I both work full time. And so I always kind of describe our life as joyful chaos. I mean, we've got our hands full, but it's really fun. A lot of family time. We love doing stuff with the kids. You know, we play with our dog. We spend a lot of time with friends and family. We both love to be outdoors. So it was a joyful chaos and having a lot of fun with our two little ones.
And so you've said that you've always wanted a big family, right? That was always kind of your dream.
Yes. I have a really wonderful family. While I don't have a lot of siblings myself, I have a lot of cousins, and we grew up kind of like siblings, really close. And so I've always wanted a big family so we could kind of fill our home with, you know, laughter and joy and games and things like that. And my husband and I are both Texans, Justin of several generations. I was raised here in Texas as well.
Were you raised in Dallas?
I actually live on the same street that I grew up on. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And your family lives very close by.
Exactly. Yes. So I have strong roots. This is our community. Mm-hmm. We're not planning, have no plans to leave. This is our home. This is our community. I still, you know, I go to the grocery store and run into people that I, you know, went to elementary school with. You know, a lot of times we try to get our kids together with cousins and mm-hmm. other family members. So our lives certainly revolve around our kids.
And so before the last year, how much did you think about the politics of abortion? Was this something that was top of mind for you?
Not at all. I really didn't think about it much at all. You know, I was very busy with kids
a lot going
and
on.
Full-time jobs. So, I mean, I'll admit I didn't follow a lot of politics. Mm-hmm. So it's not something that I followed closely. I knew that Texas had exceptions, and so kind of thought at the time that must mean people that need abortion would be able to get them. Mm. I've learned that that's not the case.
Yeah.
But I didn't think about abortion. I mean, I wanted a big family, so I just didn't think it was going to be something that would ever be in my life.
Yeah. And what about your own politics? I mean, were you a voter? Did you have a political leaning one way or the other?
I never considered myself a political person. And I would even say I don't fit perfectly in one box. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to look at views, but I really just didn't follow. I was, you know, sometimes trying to stay afloat between
I know what that's
full-time
like.
Job. Last 4 years, I did grad school, two little ones. Mm-hmm. And so just wasn't something that I followed closely.
Yeah. Well, it's like two kids, full-time job. There is not that much room in your head.
Right. I try to, you know, sneak in a couple showers each week, maybe.
I know what that's like. So tell me about finding out you were pregnant for the third time.
Yeah. We were really, really excited. Our son at that time had finally started sleeping through the night. So we thought it was a good time, you know, and so it was really excitement and a little bit of nervousness because three, you know, so of course, I think Justin being a little bit more thinking about all the logistics, he's like, well, we're going to need a bigger car and all this, you know, planning. I'm just excited. We're going to need another baby. So it's really exciting.
Yeah. And can you tell me a little bit about your previous two pregnancies? I understand. Mm-hmm. There were some difficulties with the two pregnancies you'd already had.
Right. They both ended in C-section. I was hoping that that wouldn't be the case. And then in the end, we had to go with a C-section for the safety. So that's what we did.
And so in the beginning of this third pregnancy, how were things going at the beginning?
Mm-hmm. The beginning started off a lot like my other two pregnancies, a lot of excitement. You start, you know, feeling the symptoms. And we told our family, so that was really exciting. We did a fun kind of announcement. So we shared with our family the mm-hmm. good news. So we did a little cartoon that we put together for Justin's parents and kind of took them a minute to figure out that we had a baby on the way, and everybody cheered, and it's really exciting.
Yeah. This must be really difficult to talk about. Oh. Thank you for sharing this story with us.
Thank you. I'm grateful for the opportunity to share our story. We've certainly learned a lot in this, and so I wanted to share our experience for others as well.
Yeah. And so then you got a phone call from your doctor, or there was a screening test, right?
Yes.
So can you tell me about that test and that phone call?
Yes. So we did a screening test. To be honest, I didn't even think about all of what we're screening for at the time. I was so excited to find out if we were having a boy or a girl. Mm-hmm. And so I was waiting for those tests to come back, and I was driving, and I got a call. And when I answered the phone, it was my doctor herself. That was concerning because it was never my doctor that would call with those types of results mm-hmm. before. So I pulled the car over into an empty parking lot. And that's where she told me that it wasn't a diagnosis, but that the screening we had done came back risk of trisomy 18. So I didn't know what trisomy 18 was at the time. So as I'm on the phone, I start Googling to try to find out what trisomy 18 is and what you read. It was devastating. I was in tears. She told me the next morning I would need to go see maternal fetal medicine specialist. It was devastating, but I tried to stay hopeful because it wasn't a diagnosis. It just meant that there was a chance.
Right.
You know, could it be wrong? I cried for a while in the car until I could drive.
Yeah, I can only imagine what it must have been like to get that news.
And the same phone call, she told us that we were having a girl.
Mm-hmm. That must have been so unbelievably hard.
I went home that day. I told work I couldn't come back to work and I would need some time off that day and the following. I called Justin as well, but we kind of together decided that this was not a diagnosis. It was just a screening. It just meant that there was a risk. And so we were going to just wait till we had more information. So we weren't going to panic yet. We were going to do the best we could to just kind of keep it together until we knew more information.
Yeah. And so then as you went to your subsequent appointments with the specialists. What else did you learn about this pregnancy?
It took 5 weeks from the results of that screening to get the full trisomy 18 diagnosis. We went that next morning to see the specialist. And so we had to meet with a genetic counselor and we had to learn about the testing. So we learned that amniocentesis could be done, but I couldn't do the amniocentesis until I was 16 weeks. So I would have to wait in order to be able to do that diagnostic test. We were hoping that in the meantime, maybe we would see good news on ultrasounds, but it just continued to be more and more devastating each week in the ultrasounds. Each time we had an ultrasound, it was more bad news. It was hard to stay hopeful. And we went back again, and each ultrasound, we continue to see issues. So the neural tube, the heart, the brain, the skull, limb. It was hard because when you look, it were very visible, and you could see on the ultrasound that she wasn't like our other babies.
Yeah.
So it was really hard to watch. By the end, sometimes I couldn't look at the screen.
Kate, I'm so sorry. And then while you're also carrying everything else, you're still a mother with two children. You still have your job. You're still trying to keep it together in the rest of your life. And so, you know, after all of these incredibly difficult appointments and scans, what was the medical consensus from your doctors about this pregnancy and its viability and the risks to your health?
It was the hardest news I've ever heard. But essentially, my baby was never going to live. If she survived the pregnancy, then she would be placed directly onto hospice. And so I spoke with my doctor. She said, if, you know, if you decide to continue, we need to talk about what that would be like, placing directly on hospice. When I asked, you know, we talked about what this pregnancy could look like and my baby could die in my belly. She could die during birth. And if she survived, I asked what would be the longest, you know, best case I could maybe expect. And she said a week.
Wow.
So it was very hard to hear that this pregnancy was not going to result in a baby that could live. Also, this pregnancy was really plagued with pain and suffering. I had been to the emergency room several times. I was sick. I mean, looking at the risks I was facing and knowing that this pregnancy was not going to result in a baby that would live. You know, we made what was the toughest, most difficult decision of our lives, but we made it together from a place of compassion and love.
What were the medical risks to you continuing this pregnancy?
I had several risks in the pregnancy, but of course a big one comes down to if I had to deliver the baby through an induction or a third C-section. Induction, because of my recent and repeat C-sections, comes with the risk of uterine rupture. Essentially, your C-section scarring could rip. If that happens, you could be faced with never being able to have kids again. It's a possible outcome.
Yeah.
Third C-section is not easy either. It's major surgery. And we want more kids. So it was really hard. And then I had other risks. I mean, being in and out of the hospital, I had one of my ER visits. They saw fluid inside of my canal and they had to transfer me to another hospital. If the baby died during the pregnancy, there's risk of infection.
And so can you tell me anything about that decision-making process between you and your family, you and your husband?
Justin and I made the decision together. It was really painful, of course, because we wanted our baby so badly. But we didn't want her to suffer. And the risks to me were too high. I also have two other babies and they need their mommy. So I had to, you know, make a decision with all of my babies in mind.
Yeah. And so Then once you came to this decision, how did you learn that terminating this pregnancy was not actually an option for you under Texas law?
As I was speaking with my doctor, you know, going through this, I asked her, what do other women do when they receive news like this? And she told me that some women choose to continue the pregnancy and some women do not. And I asked her if I could make that choice in Texas, and she said I could not have an abortion in Texas.
And so what was it like to hear that news?
It's devastating. I couldn't believe that I wouldn't qualify, given the risks I faced in my pregnancy. My baby was not going to live. So I was really shocked that I couldn't get medical care here in Texas.
Yeah.
With my doctors close to my home, with my husband by my side. It was devastating.
Yeah. And so when your doctor explained to you that you would not qualify, what was the reasoning? Why did you not qualify for an exception?
When she told me I wouldn't be able to have an abortion in Texas, I did ask more questions, and she told me if the baby's heart stopped beating, then they would be able to do an induction at that time, possibly. So yeah. That was really hard. Essentially, my understanding is that if my baby's heart was still beating, that I would not be able to get the care that I needed.
No matter the risks to your own health.
Mm-hmm. It's also very hard, I think, for doctors because the penalties are so high.
Yeah. And so under Texas law, doctors who perform abortions, they can face tens of thousands of dollars in fines. They can face 99 years in prison.
Right.
So your doctor is giving you medical advice, but also this is a difficult situation for her too because she can't give you the care that you need under the law.
Right. Exactly. I felt that my doctor's hands were tied because of the law.
Because part of this also is that under Texas law, even if Justin had just driven you to the hospital to get an abortion, he could be liable. He could be sued. He could face legal peril just for even helping you get the procedure.
Right, exactly.
And so what did you do at this point? How did you decide to contact the Center for Reproductive Rights?
I did what I think many people do. I was looking online. I was trying to read more. I was trying to understand more, understand what the laws were, why I couldn't get an abortion in Texas. And I came across the Center for Reproductive Rights because I saw in the news the Zurofsky versus Texas case. I actually received the results that my baby had full trisomy 18 the same day that Zurofsky versus Texas was at the Supreme Court.
Wow. And you know, with everything else, you're dealing with this incredibly difficult medical situation. Why did you decide to sue?
I really wanted to be able to have the abortion in my home state with my doctor, with Justin by my side. I wanted to be here. I wanted to be in my home. I wanted to have my doctors that I trust close by. I wanted to be able to come home and hug my babies and be close to my mom and be able to cry in your own pillow. I think sometimes people underestimate what it takes to go and travel out of state in the middle of a medical event. I mean, not only, of course, your childcare, the costs, the time off of work, but having to travel to a state you've never been to, you don't know the hospitals. So just having to travel in the middle of a medical event is really difficult. And I think people don't sometimes see that.
And so one of the things that is so unusual about your case is that there have been now more than a dozen women who have sued various states over their abortion bans because they needed medically necessary abortions and didn't qualify for them. Mm-hmm. But you're very unusual in that you're one of the only ones who's done it while currently pregnant. What was that like to take on this level of legal challenge, this level of scrutiny, while you were in the middle of this medical event?
It's the most difficult thing I've ever done in my life. I shouldn't have to go through a court for medical care. And I'm just one person. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know many other women who have been through complicated pregnancies and risks and have needed abortions and have had to travel out of state. I have a kind of an informal group of other moms from Texas who have all been through, and it's really heartbreaking to see what all these women are going through. I'm just one woman.
Yeah.
There's many going through these situations. I will say a silver lining of this, I've gotten to meet and hear stories from a lot of women across the nation. I even received an email from a woman in another state where abortion is legal, whose timing was very similar to mine. Mm-hmm. Another mom, she had two little ones just like me. She had a third pregnancy that received a diagnosis that the baby would not survive, and she was able to make that decision with her family, go to a hospital, mm-hmm. have the abortion. And so just being able to see her story and my story in parallel of what we should have been able to do mm-hmm. in the most painful time of our life.
Yeah, yeah. So you and the Center for Reproductive Rights sought a temporary restraining order mm-hmm. From Travis County District Judge Maya Guerra Gamble, and she handed down an order allowing you to get the procedure. Mm-hmm. What was it like when she ruled in your favor, saying you could get the health care you needed and that your doctor and your husband would be shielded from prosecution?
I was really grateful and really hopeful in that moment, but that quickly changed when Ken Paxton posted the message on X.
So Ken Paxton is the Texas Attorney General.
Right.
And as soon as the judge ruled in your favor, he announced that he was submitting a petition to block that ruling and taking the issue to the Texas Supreme Court. Before this whole ordeal, what did you think of Ken Paxton?
I didn't know a lot about him. So yeah. I'd seen occasional news stories about him. I mean, mm-hmm. I think there was some news stories about him before yeah. even all of this. But yeah, essentially, I never imagined that he would be able to impact my medical decisions. So
right.
was not something I thought about before.
Yeah. 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 How did you and Justin decide, that's it, we're going out of state?
We had a timeline. We couldn't wait. I needed to be able to access medical care. So it was a very hard decision, but we had to go out of state.
And so where did you end up going?
We went to New Mexico. Mm-hmm. So we went to a city neither one of us had ever been. You go to a clinic, I mean, there's protesters outside. It was really, I think the experience added a lot of pain and suffering to what was already the hardest and most difficult time in our lives. When I walked in to get the abortion, a man said, God has a plan for your family. It's not in there. And it's a very difficult experience that we had to go through.
So when you heard that protester outside say that to you,
yeah,
what went through your head?
There's nothing I want more in this world than more kids and a mm-hmm. big family. So it's hard. I prayed for mm-hmm. this pregnancy.
Yeah.
I prayed a lot going through this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And so when you came home, what happened next? What was your life like after this?
I was grateful that we could start to heal and take some time to grieve and to be back home with my kids.
Yeah.
It was very nice. And it was, of course, right before the holidays. So I was able to kind of pour into Christmas at our house mm-hmm. and prepare for, you know, for Santa and things like that. So I was grateful to come home and begin to start feeling like myself again physically, you know, to heal and to get back mm-hmm. to feeling like myself, you know, mentally. You know, it takes longer to grieve and heal. But our kids keep us so busy and bring mm-hmm. us so much joy.
Yeah.
I'm really grateful for them.
What would you say to someone who thinks that these are decisions that people make lightly or that nobody would ever need an abortion at your stage of pregnancy?
Well, I think I would ask them to look at what happened to us. This could be, you know, your sister, your wife, a loved one in your family. It took a long time to get the diagnosis. From the screening to get the results of the diagnostic test was 5 weeks.
Yeah.
We had to do an amniocentesis, which we couldn't even do until 16 weeks. And then it took weeks after that for them to give us the results. They
right.
even said they were slow because it was around the holiday time.
Right.
So these decisions are not made lightly.
Mm-hmm.
And testing and things like that takes a long time.
Yeah. What's it been like for you to be thrust into the national spotlight on this? I mean, you mm-hmm. are just a normal mom, a normal person before this. Now you have been a guest at the State of the Union. You have been part of one of the most high-profile abortion cases in the country. What has that been like for you?
I'm speechless, really. I never imagined we would go through this in our lives. I wish that we could have made our decision privately with, you know, our family and our doctors, but that wasn't the case. And I'm really grateful that the State of the Union is shining a light on this really important issue.
Yeah. What was it like to get the call? Who called you to say, hey, do you want to come to this?
Yeah, I got a phone call. The caller ID said Joseph Biden.
You're kidding. You're kidding.
I took a screenshot. Yeah. And
was it him?
I didn't answer. I think it was. I missed the call, actually. Yeah. I saw a missed call, caller ID, Joseph Biden. And I thought there was no way. I was, you know, thought somebody was trying to call to maybe say something mean. I don't know. So
I
missed the call, and then I'd gotten a few texts. So I realized this was real. Then I responded.
You got texts from him or from somebody at the White
somebody
House?
Somebody at the office. Yeah. Somebody
yeah.
at the. And then
he's not like, pick up the phone. It's the president.
No. So I, at the time, had that day, I had my kids and my nephew, 3, a 2, and a 1-year-old. And so, you know, I missed plenty of calls on those days.
Yeah.
Actually, I had my son on my hip and he had peed through his diaper all down my side. And so I certainly never thought I would get an opportunity to speak to the president. And if I did, I didn't think it would be with pee down my side.
Oh, but my God.
That's how I think it goes for moms sometimes.
Oh, yeah. My God. So you get on the call with the president.
Yeah, so I...
You got a diaper situation.
A diaper situation. Had to call in grandma. I said, grandma, we need you ASAP.
Yeah.
So
SOS.
Handed the kids
yeah.
over to grandma, and then we were quickly able to get on the phone and have a phone call
yeah.
with President Biden and Dr. Biden.
And what did they say to you?
They told me I was brave, which was really amazing to hear. They said that... no woman should have to go through what I went through.
Mm-hmm.
And she invited me to sit in her box at the State of the Union.
Wow.
So, incredible honor.
Has this been a political transformation for you? I mean, how has this experience changed the way you think about politics and how politics affects your life?
I certainly went from being someone that was not a political person to being, you know, I certainly follow everything now, and I will not miss a vote going forward. What I've learned from this experience is that if you are pregnant, if you love someone that is pregnant, if you may become pregnant, you have to vote like your life depends on it.
Kate, is there anything else you want to share with us about this experience? Because I think there's a lot of people like you who sort of think that this is not something that would apply to them,
mm-hmm.
and that politics is not something that would necessarily touch their life in the most intimate way until it does.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you say to other people who think that abortion won't affect their lives?
Before I had this experience, you know, I was not a political person. We just, you know, we balance what we can
mm-hmm.
Take on our plates, and politics always tended to stress me out. So I would try to choose things that would keep me, you know, joyful. And so before this, I wasn't a, you know, political person. I've learned a lot through my journey. And I've learned that the laws today are hurting families and women, people that want to build their families. Pregnancies can be very complicated. and not all pregnancies are viable. And I hope that people learn from our journey mm-hmm. and from, you know, what we went through.
Yeah.
I think as a nation, we have a lot to learn mm-hmm. about abortion.
Yeah.
Sometimes prayed for, wanted pregnancies end in abortion. It's medical care.
Yeah.
And we have to let families make medical decisions with their doctors.
Yeah. Kate, thank you so much for making time to speak with us. And for, I know it's not easy to share this story. So I just really appreciate you having the bravery and the strength to share this, because I think it's really important for people to hear about it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the opportunity to tell our story.
Of course.
Thank you.
If you want to learn more about Kate Cox, how this experience has changed her politics, and the legal fight over abortion rights, you can read my profile of her in an upcoming issue of Time. Thank you so much for listening to Person of the Week. If you like what you heard, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, we'd love to hear from you. So send your tips or thoughts on our show to personoftheweek@time.com. I'm Charlotte Alter. See you next week.
Person of the Week is hosted by Charlotte Alter. It's produced by Nina Bisbano and Allison Bailey. Our senior producer is Ursula Summer. Our story editor is Katie Feather. This episode was mixed by Joe Plord and Lucy Little. Our theme music was composed by Billy Libby. Joseph Frischmuth is our fact checker. Person of the Week is a co-production of Time Studios and Sugar 23. At Time, our executive producers are Dave O'Connor, Michael Erlinger, and Sam Jacobs. At Sugar 23, our executive producers are Mike Mayer, Michael Sugar, and Liam Billingham. Sasha Mathias is the head of audio at Time. You can find us online at time.com/personoftheweek and wherever you get your podcasts.